Good morning. This is West Virginia Public Broadcasting. I'm Teresa Wills. On last night's episode of the Legislature Today, host Andrea Lanham spoke with Senator Randy Smith, chairman of the Senate Energy, Industry, and Mining Committee. She asked Smith to address a number of energy-related issues this year, such as the potential of job opportunities, and for his thoughts on a co-tenancy bill that has sparked much debate at the State House. Here's an excerpt from that interview.
Walk us through how big of a role this industry has played in the last year with shoring up general revenue, and just briefly, what kind of expansion do you see?
Well, I think it's no secret that severance tax from coal and gas is two of the main reasons that we've been able to climb out of this hole that we was in for the last several years with the increase of coal severance tax and increase in gas severance tax. So it's had a huge effect on our budget this year. And going forward with the expansion of the gas industry and hopefully the stabilizing the coal industry for right now, you know, it gives West Virginia a brighter future because we are a natural resource state. You know, we depend a lot on our natural resources, coal, gas, oil, and so it's going to be a huge impact going forward.
And I know last month our revenue estimates ran short, and I know severance tax did have a role to play in that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, a lot of it is business climate. You know what I mean? You know, we're one of the few states that has a coal severance tax, and we have one of the highest gas severance tax of, you know, any gas producing states. And, you know, I'm not saying we should give away the farm, but, you know, we need to find ways to be more business friendly and attract, you know, the drilling in our areas and the state.
And we've heard from viewers, and there's been testimony at the co-tenancy public hearing, that these jobs aren't going to West Virginians. Crews are being brought in for these jobs, and that there's nothing in the legislation yet that says West Virginians should have preference in the hiring process, at least to set a quota. Is that accurate?
To some point, a lot of these jobs are specialty jobs that West Virginians cannot fill yet because the gas industry, you know, fracking it is rather new. But with the community colleges and colleges getting on board, you know, and training people for pipeline inspectors and, you know, safety people. And these jobs will start going more and more to West Virginians, I believe. The reasons a lot of them are not West Virginia jobs now is because we don't have the qualified workforce. But we are filling that gap with our community colleges and technical colleges to do this.
So let's talk about the co-tenancy bill, and that was in your committee earlier today, and it passed out of the committee.
Yeah.
Now, there have been a few concerns mentioned, and in the past they've mentioned that it values corporations over people. What would your response to that be?
Well, they say that about every bill, you know, frankly. You know, it's not about the corporation because your landowners and mineral owners are the one that owns these minerals in the state. Most of them, you know, I mean, the corporations are buying them, they buy the mineral rights, but our property owners here in West Virginia. And the co-tenancy bill, it's basically a majority rules bill, is a piece that the gas company needs to make it easier for them to develop. You know, there's a lot of false information goes on with the co-tenancy bill. You know, they call it the force pooling, and it's not force pooling. We're not talking about three or four tracts of land or five tracts of land and forcing them into that. We're talking one tract of land that might have 30, 40 heirs. And this bill here, most states go with the majority rules, 51%. This bill here, they have to have 75%.
Now, I know environmentalists have testified in the public hearing earlier this month and have told us that they're experiencing an overarching sense that everything is being fast-tracked and that there are long-term consequences that go along with rushing things through. They point to the Regulatory Reform Act, now under consideration, which they say expedites the permitting process.
Well, you know, that's false. You know, I've been around the Capitol. I was in the House of Delegates for 4 years, and the gas bills was always an issue that we tried to get them passed. The one, I can't remember the House bill now, that failed on the last night with a 49-49 vote. That was 3 years ago. Last year, we had a gas bill passed out of the Senate, and went to the House. So basically, this is, you know, just another attempt at it. You know, it's been going on for at least, this is my sixth year here, and it's been going on for at least 6 years trying to get some kind of legislation passed to, you know, improve the business climate for with drilling for gas, and, you know, to get the Farm Bureau's on board with this, the Mineral Owners Association's on board with this, you know, I mean, this, all the stakeholders. We finally got something that all the stakeholders there has agreed on, you know, with the environmentalists. You know, they're against all drilling, all coal, or all mining or whatever. So, you know, it's not really fair to, you know, for them to say that we're fast-tracking this, because this has been going on a long time, trying to come up with a solution. And I believe we've finally came up with a solution that all the stakeholders and companies, you know, the gas companies don't like this bill 100%, but neither does the landowners. Has got some, but they've came to a agreement that they can all agree on. So that's huge.
That was Senator Randy Smith, chair of the Senate Energy, Industry, and Mining Committee, speaking with Andrea Lanham, host of the Legislature Today. Visit our website to watch or listen to the full interview. West Virginia's Community Development Grant Program recently announced more than $1.5 million in projects focused on broadband access. 9 are for studies and 3 will actually build out the infrastructure. It's the first time this grant program is funding broadband projects. One of the studies will focus on Gilbert, Mingo County, where better broadband could have a big impact on the growing tourism industry. Molly Bourne reports.
Every October, Gilbert, population 475, swells with visitors. 5,000 people come for Trail Fest, which markets itself as one of the premier ATV events on the East Coast. The tourism surrounding the Hatfield-McCoy Trail has helped make Gilbert one of the fastest-growing towns in the area. And having reliable internet access here is critical to building the local economy, says Mayor Vivian Livingood.
How we handle internet right now is what I call snail paced.
That can make it hard to do business, and she would know. Livingood and her husband own 6 lodges in the area. Sometimes when guests are paying for a room, she says, the credit card machine will stop in the middle of a transaction.
And there's instances where our guests have called us and say, your internet's down and I had to get this report in before I hit the trails, and can you please come over and reset the router or do something? We're a remote area, we're fighting for tourism, and we need to offer the best that we can to get them to come back again.
Nearly 40% of rural Americans don't have broadband access, according to the Federal Communications Commission. The main reason these areas fall behind is partly because it's a tough sell for companies to invest in sparsely populated areas. Terrain makes building out the needed infrastructure a challenge, too. Nicholas and Hampshire counties each got a fifth or more of the grant money and plan to build out connections with it. The Webster and Wyoming County Commissions will use their grants on a joint study looking at how to improve access in 11 southern counties. The grant for Gilbert is only $75,000, but starting the plan is a crucial first step, says Leanne Ray, the grant writer for the Mingo County Commission.
Everything, when you go over to that part of the county, it just moves very slow and you have a lot of outages. Just there's no consistency there, and we really need that strong, consistent flow of access in order for our merchants to be able to conduct business.
Mitchell Barbera makes custom metal artwork at his shop in Gilbert, in a space once home to his grandfather's service station. His work is impressive. For Trailfest last year, he made a perfectly rendered piece of an ATV riding up the outline of West Virginia. He was a little shy when it came to an interview, but his dad, Rob, who helps out, had some thoughts on broadband.
I think to diversify our economy more and to provide more of an incentive for folks to access trail areas and to provide businesses here, we do need to have that added.
They say their internet service is pretty good, actually, but it's a lack of cell service that's the problem.
So when you have folks that access our website or the social media, and they try to get in touch with us, if they call, it's a hit and miss whether they get through.
Better broadband coverage would allow for easier expansion of cell service, according to the West Virginia Broadband Enhancement Council. That group formed in 2016 to oversee broadband plans in the state. At the Larry Joe Harless Community Center in Gilbert, Doctors provide primary care 5 days a week to roughly 30 patients a day on average. The center serves about the same number for its specialty care in neurology, cardiology, and other areas, and there's a monthly eye clinic too. Executive Director Cheryl Mitchum says without secure and reliable broadband, doctors sometimes can't access complete patient records.
Oftentimes we go down, and when we go down, they have difficulties. Also, you have to realize we need the full history to be able to really diagnose and treat.
She says the paper files aren't always stored in those specialty clinics, and sometimes doctors have to rely on their memory. She says the center has explored bringing in programs to help patients manage chronic diseases, but that progress has advanced only so far.
And some of that has been hindered by not being able to link in as we need to using broadband services with either the instructor themselves or with downloading or uploading that patient's information.
Mitchum sees the benefits for the local economy, too.
Without broadband, we have much difficulty in keeping people here. Let's face it, we are a society that has to have our smartphone with us even when we're off and away. And if you can't access your loved ones and your work, you feel lost, even if you do say you're on a retreat.
The subject of broadband internet access is also in the national eye. President Trump's recent budget blueprint, for instance, includes $50 billion for rural infrastructure, though he's letting state and local governments set the direction for that money. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Molly Bourne.
In the wake of school shootings in Kentucky and Florida, there has been a rash of copycat school threats throughout the Ohio Valley, leaving law enforcement and education officials grappling with how to improve security. A school counseling expert from West Virginia University says it's useful to look at the potential school shootings that did not happen. Glennis Board reports that his work focuses on how schools have successfully averted shooting incidents.
Chair of WVU's counseling department, Jeff Daniels, interviewed school personnel and law enforcement officers who were able to prevent imminent school shootings. He says these schools were all able to disrupt what the FBI refers to as the code of silence.
In schools where there had been a shooting, 81% of those schools, the shooter had informed somebody in advance about what he intended to do. But the code of silence was that in almost all of those situations, nobody came forward and told anybody.
Daniels says schools that were able to stop shootings all worked diligently to cultivate what he calls a culture of dignity and respect. One school that averted a shooting really stood out, he said. The school had a history of violence, but after years of work, had become one of the safest city schools. Daniels recalls one incident with a troubled student that spoke volumes about how the school had achieved its turnaround.
The week before I came there, the student got in another fight, and the school resource officer, out of frustration, said, "What do you want me to come and give you a hug every day?" And she said, "Here's this tough girl, teenager," and she burst into tears and she said yes. So the school resource officer was late to my interview because she had to go find this girl and give her a hug.
Daniels says building a more compassionate culture in schools does not require a lot of resources, but it does take a lot of commitment from faculty and staff to systematically be more invested in informal student engagement. Daniels says through his research, he's noticed a tendency throughout society to try to find simple solutions to systemic problems like school shootings. For example, he says schools spent millions on anti-bullying programs after the Columbine shooting, but to little effect.
Right now, the simple answer is gun control. We don't have the data on this at this point within this country to know if gun control laws would have prevented some of these shootings.
Daniels says it's hard to gauge effectiveness of laws because many are poorly enforced. New gun control laws face significant political obstacles. Daniels hopes to continue researching mass shooting aversion techniques. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Glennis Board in Wheeling, West Virginia.
The Ohio Valley Resource is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Thank you.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.